Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Youth soccer has exploded over the last couple of years, with around 3 million children participating in the sport. And with players, parents, siblings, coaches, and friends all involved, that 3 million number starts to get bigger and bigger. Soccer's unique blend of not being too dangerous, like football, not requiring different skills, like track, and not being too long, like baseball, has led many parents to pick it as the sport to put their kids in. But with so many people involved, should we be looking at the sport any differently? And what is the best way to support our children involved in soccer? Joining us now is Asia Mape, founder of I Love to Watch You Play, a free library of blogs, podcasts, and videos to help parents with kids in sports. Thanks for joining us today, Asia.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I love the name of your site. I love to watch you play. But as a sports mom myself, I feel like the title also leaves room for a but. Like, I love to watch you play, right? I love to watch you play, but it's time consuming. I love to watch you play, but it's expensive. What made you start this project?
I love that, Amy, and you are so right. And there's a lot of buts that can come after that, including some days I just don't love to watch you play, which can be hard for parents. So I was a former college athlete. I was raising, or still am, raising three daughters. And I worked in sports television for 20 plus years. And so at the time my kids were going through youth sports, I had a friend who was also in sports television who said, wow, this is really crazy. And mind you, Amy, this is many years ago at this point. It was already in full swing. And she said, you know, I think we could really do something around this to be helpful to parents. And at first it was really just a passion project, but it's become really my life's work for the past 10 years.
So looking at soccer specifically, how does I Love to Watch You Play look at youth soccer?
Well, it's near and dear to my heart, youth soccer, because I have one daughter who plays actually at Ohio State, and I'm based in LA, so it is just really cool that here I am on your show.
I need to say OH to you then.
yes. But I had to go through it. And, you know, you talked about this a little early on. I think one of the main reasons we all start in youth soccer is because it's really one of the easier sports to start with, because it's volleyball, needs a lot of hand eye. There's, you know, water polo, you're not putting kids in the pool. Even like track and some of these other ones are more difficult at the younger ages. So we start our kids in youth soccer, and way too many of us stay with soccer. So we don't try other things. I think that's also a reason why so many kids play it. It's an amazing sport. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I have a daughter who plays at a high level. But I think that's why so many of us end up here in soccer.
Now, I grew up in Western Pennsylvania, where football was and still is king. But then I moved here to Central Ohio and just discovered everyone plays soccer, right? So why do you think that soccer has exploded so much in the past few? Well, I feel like soccer has always been a big thing here in Central Ohio, but why has it exploded so much over the past few years?
Well, I think definitely they call themselves the 99ers, that team with Brandi Chastain, and she, you know, ripped off her shirt and swung it around. I feel like for girls particularly, and I have three daughters, that kind of blew it up, right? I already think soccer, a lot of us started in it, but I think that really sort of opened our eyes to the sport and to the excitement and magic of it. And of course, the success of that women's national team has been incredible. And so I think the girls' side has really exploded. And I think it's come to the States more. So it's always been big in Europe, right? And I'm not talking about youth levels, but I'm talking about watching it, because it's a whole chain. You don't just like the whole system of it is starting it as youth, then you become maybe a higher level player, then you're a fan, right? It's a whole ecosystem. And so I think the more it's been broadcast here in the States, and the more that we've gotten to know like Premier League players and teams, and we have two leagues here and now three for women, you know, it just explodes it even more. I think parents are seeing that, kids are seeing that, so it just keeps the boom going.
On your site, I love to watch you play. I know soccer is one of the topics, but you go through many sports. Is there any one sport that gets the most chatter on your site?
I think probably soccer and volleyball, particularly for girls. You know, I as you said, I do talk about, and so many of the issues, Amy, are across all sports. They really are. Some are specific. Most of them go across, the ones that I talk about most. But I'd say, and it might just be also, I write a lot about soccer and volleyball because I have two athletes that play those sports, so I understand them better. I also had a water polo player. But I think really, if I look at Facebook and the pages and I'm on several of different sports, I think the soccer and the volleyball ones are the biggest.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about youth spot soccer and other youth sports with Asia Mape, founder of I Love to Watch You Play, which is a free library of blogs, podcasts, and videos to help parents with kids in sports. So earlier, I added a few buts to I Love to Watch You Play, but it's time consuming, but it's expensive. So let's start about that, but it's time consuming. When did soccer in particular become so time consuming, where it is multiple practices a week and everything is instead of just a match, it's a tournament all the time. When did that trend start?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a historian of youth sports as much as I am working with parents, but I know just from being involved that it's been a slow, steady climb. And there's been great books, and Linda Flanagan wrote a great book. There's a bunch of them out there about the origin of when the problem started. But you know, it dates back, it's been going on. I think a lot of people think when they get into it that it's a new phenomenon. But it's been 20 plus, probably plus years, 15 plus years that it's been steadily growing. And look, with NIL, with all these new changes, it's only going to get even higher stakes, more pressure, more travel. Because what's happening is, Amy, everyone is putting their kids in it. And then the system is telling us more, 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 more. And it's all designed to make money, right? That's where it starts and where it ends, really. It's all about making money. And so the parents and the kids are not, especially the kids, are not at the forefront of what youth sports system is about these days. That doesn't mean that it's bad. It doesn't mean that we can't exist in it and still do great things and still have our kids get the best out of youth sports. But it makes it challenging because the system is not set up to put the athlete at the center.
And now I know that you don't know numbers on this because it would be really hard to figure it out, but there's around 3 million children involved in youth soccer around the country. Do you have any concept of like how many are casual players compared to how many are actually involved in these competitive travel teams that are so intense?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know that answer. I know that typically, you know, starting, I think there's even as young as U5 club teams now, which is really a sad state of affairs. But I think most of kids, by the time if they like it and their parents are all in, you know, by the time they're 7 or 8, my youngest daughter started club, I think, in second grade. My oldest was a little late. She was playing a ton of sports and started in not till sixth grade. But I don't know the exact ratio there or percentage.
Well, it's funny that you say that her starting in sixth grade, so she was probably 12. That's starting late at getting,
That's
right?
starting late.
That's when I started playing like I was a volleyball player. I didn't start volleyball until even ninth grade back in the day.
I know. Well, soccer, like I said, I think it's one of those that people put their kids in earliest. That and like t-ball, I think, you know. So it is there. And nowadays, the more money to be made, right? You might as well have a U5, an elite this, and an all-star that. You know, it's all just sort of feeding on our fears and on our FOMO.
Let's talk a little bit more about the fear and the fear of missing out. Do does every parent just want their kid to be a part of a team, and or does every parent want their kid to be a soccer star? What are you seeing more of?
I think most of us, not all, but most of us start with really good intentions. I think that like new parents, and I really try hard not to do that beat down on parents, right? Because we start out with good intention. We all want what's best for our kids. And I think most of us think, keep them out of trouble, keep them busy, keep them off screens, keep them active and fit. And the problem, Amy, is that once you get into it, and I've seen this happen so many times and to myself as well, it's really hard to keep your own child at the center of what's right for them and to let all that craziness kind of swirl around you. You really do get caught up in it, because if everyone is playing, moving to club, wow, we better move to club or we're gonna get left behind. If everybody is doing that expensive summer camp, oh, we can't really afford it, but we better do it or they're not going to make the team. And you sort of get swept up into it. And it's hard to step back and have some perspective about what's right and what's wrong. And there is a certain, I don't want to take this Pollyanna view, because it's not like you step out and you take a season off and you don't do club and there's no repercussions, because there are, because that is what a lot of people are doing. But you have to make the decisions best for your child and your family and do what's right for them. And there's a lot of ways, as I said earlier, to do that, be successful and be healthy and keep your kids' mental and physical health at the forefront of your choices.
One thing you write about on your site is that you have to be careful for when the parent starts to care more about the sport than the kid does. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that happened to me for sure. I mean, my oldest daughter was a great water polo player, a very good athlete. We started her in soccer, but we realized after we're screaming run all the time that maybe that wasn't her sport. So we moved her to water polo. We loved it. She loved it. She wanted to be an Olympian. She did a show about it she got a chance to do something with Cam Newton. It was like our world. It was our oldest daughter. She's our oldest daughter. And we were like, this is amazing. And she's so good. And she maybe can get a scholarship. At some point, her love and her passion started to wane, and she got more into art. She found other things that she wanted to do. And we weren't really on that journey with her. So we were still like, wait a minute, we chose your high school for this. You could get a college scholarship. What are we doing here? Like, no, you need to go do this. Like, there's a point where you lose perspective about whose journey it is. And I think it happens to a lot of parents. And again, I think with good intention. I certainly never realized in the moment that I was doing anything wrong. I thought I was helping her through rough patches, helping her when she was having moments, because as kids do, where they lose a little bit of their momentum or their motivation. But really, at some point, it crosses over into I'm doing damage right now for our relationship and for her mental health and for her love and her joy is gone. And I'm not seeing that. And I think that happens to a lot of us.
Yeah, you mentioned one of the big motivators in youth sports, and it's this desire for scholarships. I mean, people are starting to think about it as young as elementary school, and they're talking about getting a soccer scholarship someday to go to college. Do you find that are soccer scholarships harder to come by since so many people play the sport? You mentioned water polo. Maybe it's easier to get a water polo scholarship.
They're all around the same, right? Like 7% of kids will play in college. 2% will play Division I. Soccer's definitely way more kids play it than any other sport. So I think it's harder in that respect for sure. But it is. It's. I think the thing to remember is there's a place for almost every athlete. It may not be Division I. It might be Division II. It might be Division III. It might be club team. You know, or if it's just rec through your high school seasons and into high school and not playing in college. But if you like to play, there is a place for you to play. And there's usually a place if you're, you know, serious about it to play at the next level. But we have to be open-minded. We have to look at other things. And I think that what's happened, you say scholarship, I think it's been even more so just to get into college. The people that I think that are following my side and that I hear from a lot, it's not even about a scholarship. The scholarships up until this new rule change, you're talking about 14 or 12 scholarships maybe on a women's soccer team divvied up amongst 30 kids. It's not a ton of money riding on this. It's simply getting into college, and for many, getting into a good college. So that's why they push. That's why they're putting the pressure on them.
So you might not have the grades to get into the fancy college, but you maybe have the soccer skills to get into the fancy college.
Exactly. It bumps you up in the list, 100%.
Coming up, we'll continue to talk more about youth sports with Asia Mape, founder of I Love to Watch You Play. And listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Any questions you have about youth soccer or a youth sports story you would like to tell us, give us a call. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. From sprained ankles to shin splints, youth soccer has put a lot of pressure and some risk on kids. But those risks are countered by the thrill of winning and learning key skills like teamwork. With kids still developing while they're learning these sports, support from everyone involved is crucial, from coaches to friends to parents to the opposing teams. What can everyone do to support kids in the sport, and what unique challenges does soccer bring to the table? Still with us is Asia Mape, founder of I Love to Watch You Play, a free library of blogs, podcasts, and videos to help parents with kids in sports. Thanks for being with us today, Asia.
Thank you for having me, Amy.
And listeners, I would love to hear from you with any questions you have about youth sports, in particular soccer, and if you have a story you'd like to tell about your youth sports experience, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Again, that's 614-292-8513. So, Asia, what do you think makes soccer such a great sport for children to be a part of? Like, what skill is soccer best at teaching?
Well, the obvious one would be teamwork, right? I mean, there's a lot of kids on the field at one time. Everything has to like work together. You have to be, very aware of what's happening, not just if you're a defender, but what's going on offense. I mean, there's a ton of things about soccer that make it, I mean, they call it the beautiful game. It's almost like the perfect team sport that exists. And I absolutely love it. So I think that's like something sports specific, but sports in general, oh my goodness, Amy, they teach us life. They are a microcosm of life, right? You're learning everything about character development, what kind of teammate you are, what kind of, you learn to listen, you learn to take feedback, you learn to work with other people that aren't just like you. You learn, what it feels like to fail and fail and fail. You learn what it feels like when you accomplish something great and something good happens. I mean, it is just a mini life lesson at all times, every from practices to games to the, dedication it takes if you really want to play at a high level.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Listeners, if you would like to tell your story about youth sports, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we have Cindy in Worthington. Cindy, what would you like to tell us about?
Hi, I actually have a question for your guest. I was wondering if she had ever interviewed parents who had been elite or Olympic athletes and gotten a perspective from them on what they think they want their kids to experience in their own sporting lives. Because I would imagine the perspective is a little bit different than a parent who's never been you know, that high level in the sport before?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Cindy wants to know if you've talked with professional athletes about what they wish kids, the parents of kids in sports would know.
I love that question. And I haven't done like a formal asking and interviewing. I mean, I've interviewed tons of athletes over the years, but I can tell you this because I've had a lot of professional athletes on my kids' teams. They are usually the most calm, the most, I've had Olympians, NBA stars, soccer stars all across the board. And almost 100%, I can say they can see the development arc, right? Because I think we so often get lost in the moment of what's happening and this is the end of the world because they're not starting or because of this or that. And they have perspective and they are great parents, overall sports parents. That's what I can tell you I've seen the most. They really do have a perspective about it. I will also say that they know what goes into it. I think, I don't know the stats offhand, but there is a huge, huge percentage of kids who make it to the top levels that have former professional parents as their, or former professional athletes as their parents. And they're doing things that are out of the ordinary. And they do, like, I mean, AZ Fudd, the basketball player, is traveling when she was a youth athlete to another state for training. It's not that they are just, oh, it's going to work out. They know what goes into it. But I would also say they're level-headed and understand that arc of development better than almost anyone else does.
Mm. You mentioned earlier the idea that, you know, only 7% of someone who plays youth sports will end up playing it in college and a smaller percentage make it to professionals. Do you hear about that from, do parents understand that, like, the percentage of, you know, most kids are not going to be Olympians. Most kids are not going to be the professional. And do you think that everyone knows from a young age who has a chance of making it?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think parents think they know, yeah. Right? That's part of the problem, is that I think it's a high majority that those kids that at the young age are identified do not end up going that far in their sport. It is no indicator. And in fact, putting your kid in one sport early because they're good at it is almost going to raise the chances that they're going to get stressed about it, burnt out, quit. I mean, 70% of kids quit, Amy, by the time they're 13. Mm. And it's because we do hone in, oh, they're going to be great. And we go all in and they're just kids. And like, parents should act as the guardrails, not the gas pedals in all of this stuff. We need to be slowing it down, making smart choices, making choices with them at the forefront where we're talking and communicating with them. Because yes, it's great if your kid goes on and does all these incredible things. That percentage is so small overall comparatively. So what we're doing is robbing them of the things they should be getting from sports. The joy, the teamwork, the character development, all that stuff. We're making it this pressure-packed thing that is doing the exact opposite of what it should do. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a tiny percentage if you think of it. So if you're a parent, I like to say, so what is it all about? Why are you doing this? Because if 7%, are you willing to risk all that you're doing, all that you're putting it into, the time, breaking their bodies, ruining their, like, mental health is a huge thing with athletes, just to make that 7%. Like, it's really something that parents need to think about. And it's a message I'm trying to always get out there.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about youth sports with Asia Mape, founder of I Love to Watch You Play. Listeners, you can join us, 614-292-8513. We have Jim in Stark County. Jim, what would you like to add?
Hi, hello to you, Amy, and your guest. Okay, two anecdotes. Out of the realm of theory and into things that actually happened. I coached seventh grade football a number of years ago. Anecdote number one. There was a father on the sideline. He had two boys that were good in seventh grade, and he had a very small boy with him. I'm going to say 3, 4, 5 years old. So this is a word to coaches. Coaches, watch your parents, because I watched the man, and he would bring a football with him to the games. And every time one of his boys was out there and made a good play, he would take the football and shove it into the toddler's hands and say, hold it, don't drop it, pick it up, shove it in his hands. Don't drop it, pick it up, shove. Well, I had a talk with that man, and he said maybe he wasn't doing the right thing. So coaches, watch your parents. Anecdote number two is our team was undefeated. I was lucky enough to have, you know, some good players. And in seventh grade, if you have three or four good players, you win a lot of games. So we did. And the athletic director came in one day. I was also a science teacher at the time. Athletic director came into where I was teaching. He said, Jim, the head coach doesn't want to renew you for next year for the seventh graders. And I said, well, why is that? He said, well, it's that policy you have about if they come to practice, they're going to get into the game. And I said, well, that's my policy. If they come every day and they're at practice and they do what we ask, they're going to get in the game. That's my rule. That's my policy. And he said, well, the coach doesn't think you're working with the best athletes. These were seventh graders. This goes to a couple of things your guest has talked about. So I left after 2 years of being undefeated. I left because they wanted me to work with the best athletes who were 12 years old.
Jim, thank you so much for your stories. Thank you for your time. And thanks for being a youth football coach, because I know that that is a time-consuming thing. So, Asia, let's start with the second one first. That idea, if you come to practice, then you get to play in the game, you know, instead of just putting the best players in all the time. What do you make of that?
Well, there's definitely an age case to be made for age, right? Mm-hmm. After a certain age level, I think it is appropriate. I would say seventh grade is right on that bubble of like when they're younger, and this is school ball that we're talking about. There's a lot of leagues that people can play rec that should always get into every game, and it's hands down shouldn't be an issue ever. But at a certain age, if you're in club or you're in your school team, I do see that most of them make that distinction, and it becomes more about winning and less about development. Seventh grade seems a little young for that. I would hope ninth grade would be where that would start, but it's right on the bubble, and it certainly does not surprise me.
And then the other point that Jim made was saying that coaches need to watch their parents to make sure parents don't get too intense. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's hard to be a coach, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be responsible for so many things. You're the psychiatrist, you're the travel planner, you're the, you know, finding everybody's loose hairband guy. You're like whatever it takes to get it done. But that being said, I do think that coaches need to open up and let parents in. I think too often we're very separated, and I don't blame the coaches for this because parents can be a lot. But I think the more they involve us, and to Jim's, you know, notion of like watching them, I don't know about watching them, but there should be discussions. That coach definitely, I think he's saying like he was punishing his little kid almost when there was a mistake on the field. Like that is pretty extreme, but I do think that a coach would have a lot of room to have discussions with parents more than they do when the sideline behavior isn't appropriate. I think they want to, you know, cover their eyes and just pretend it's not happening. And I think as parents, it's really important to us that the coaches, you know, not like us, that's not the right word, but you know, that our kids don't get penalized and that there's a good relationship there. And so if the coach says something, a lot of times I think the parents will respect it. And I think too often coaches don't want to involve the parents, but it's even before there's a problem. It's setting down the ground rules at the first meeting. It's following them through. It's having open door policy. It's inviting parents in. Let's talk about it. What's going on with your kid? And I know there's not always enough time in the day to do that, right? So I say that knowing full well that's hard to do, but the more we work together, if we're truly about, you know, growing athletes as human beings, we should be on the same team and not against each other. And so I think that's a really big and important point.
And let's talk a little bit about that idea of the balance for a coach of, as a parent, you want your kid to get better in the sport, you want them to succeed, you also want them to learn teamwork and learn all those skills and perhaps even have fun. So how do you find a coach who, I guess, will help you win, but then also they have fun? Do people go coach shopping to find the right fit?
They should. It's hard to do, right? Because a lot of times your options are limited. What's near you? Like, how much time do you want to spend driving? And I've seen parents drive. We used to have kids on our teams 2 hours away, and we're in LA, so there's a ton of teams, because they were making sacrifices, whether it was more for winning or for a particular coach. If you have the ability to coach shop, 100% do it, or at least team or league shop, club shop is what I'm trying to think of, the word club, because it is important. And there are clubs that are very well known in our area of what they prioritize, what they value, and understanding that. And I don't think parents should ever feel, and I think too often we do, that we don't want to bother them. We don't want to become that parent that is annoying. We don't want our kid to, not on the right team because we made too much of a fuss. I'm not talking about being annoying. I'm not talking about bothering people when there's not like the right or appropriate time, but I am talking about having hard and good conversations with the people that are going to be leading your child, because it's really important to know that and know who they are. I think, unfortunately, as I said too many times, there's not a lot of options to be able to do that. But a bad coach can completely derail a child's joy and even worse in certain cases.
And then let's talk about the sideline parents. You know, whenever you watch soccer, sometimes there's stands for them to sit in. But most of the time, because of the way soccer fields are set up, the parents are just standing or sitting right there on the edge. They're very close to the action. Some of them make their opinions known more than others. What's your advice on how to be a good soccer parent?
Yeah, well, mostly keep your mouth shut. Cheer for all the kids. I think that's really important. I mean, you're modeling behavior that your child is seeing everything. Even screaming at the ref, you think it doesn't matter, it's not impactful. If you're constantly screaming at refs and complaining, what is that message you're sending to your child? You know, that it's okay, A, to scream at another human, or B, that you're taking the control from them and putting it into someone else. If you're complaining in the car ride home every time, it's like saying you couldn't handle this, so this is where I'm putting all of the blame. And you're like either A, not part of that whole discussion, or there's always someone to blame. And it's just such a bad way to go about it. Not to mention, Amy, when you scream at a kid, they use the wrong part of their brain. They stop being creative and free, and they tighten up. And it's just, there's nothing, I've done a ton of articles about this, there's nothing good that comes out of yelling at a child or a ref when you're on the sideline. That being said, I think what you can do is be supportive. If your kid messes up, don't have that face of, because they see that too. You want to be relaxed and smile. You don't want them to think you're another person adding pressure to what's going on out there. And there's a lot of things you can do before you even get to the field to ready yourself for this. I love talking about the drive there is equally or more important in my mind than the drive home. Because you get yourself in a state of mind, you get your kid in a good state of mind, they're more confident, and you're more ready for whatever's going to happen on the field.
Well, Asia Mape, I want to thank you for joining us today. Founder of I Love to Watch You Play, a free library of blogs, podcasts, and videos to help parents with kids in sports. Asia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk with a local soccer mom turned author to get her opinions on youth soccer. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. From traveling across the country to practices in the rain multiple times a week, youth soccer is as much of a time commitment for the parents as it is for the children. The sport takes many forms and can create an environment where the entire family's livelihood is controlled by carpools, snack signups, practice times, and it can strain everyone involved. This doesn't even account for the personalities of the players that they can encounter on and off the field. So, how does a parent navigate all of this? Joining us now is Karen Scholl, author of Surviving Soccer, A Chill Parent's Guide to Carpools, Calendars, Coaches, Clubs, and Corner Kicks. Welcome to All Sides, Karen.
Hi.
So, what inspired you to write this book and call it Surviving Soccer?
Well, it was a lot of soccer. I have two sons. They are... combined did 16 years of soccer, so I felt like I did my time, and we loved it. We were a soccer family. We played outside in the yard when they were little. There was always a soccer ball being kicked around the house. I played soccer as a kid. It was the only sport we really kind of knew, and soccer is a bit of a gateway sport, I think. It's one of those easy first sports, so my kids got in early, and we got in, and they loved it. We loved it. We got so engrossed, and, you know, one day, if several years in, we were at a tournament. We were at Spindler Park in Hilliard, and I was looking around for my kids' team, and I couldn't see my kid, but I could see, like, I could hear all the conversations around me, and I was just, you know, when I was away from it emotionally, but just listening, I thought, wow, like, this is wild, like, what we do. So, you know, and I'm a writer, I'm a copywriter, and I was like, this is the thing I need to write about. So that's really how it started, just kind of having a little bit of distance and then going, this is really something to me.
And your book is titled A Guide. So does that mean, are you hoping parents who have their kids in youth soccer right now are your readers, or are you looking for anyone who wants to understand soccer a little better?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, soccer parents are the butt of so many jokes. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote this for soccer parents as a soccer parent. And I think I feel like I take a little bit of a big sister approach to it. So it's for soccer families. It's a great gift for soccer parents and soccer grandparents. There are so many soccer grandparents showing up at games. So it's kind of a, yeah, we did this. It was crazy. It was fun. And you weren't out there alone. So for younger soccer families, I think it's great. But I think also for folks like me who are on the other side of it, it's a, oh yeah, this was a funny thing we did.
And you take a very lighthearted tone, a witty tone with the book, often sarcastic. Why did you decide to go that way instead of telling serious soccer stories?
Well, honestly, it started kind of serious. Mm-hmm. When I first started writing, I was writing about my experience playing soccer and my kids and the things we learned, these emotional experiences. And I wrote this 80,000 word book, and I sent it to a writing mentor. And I said, is it a book? Is it something? And she goes, well, she said, you're a good writer. But she said, you know, if you want to make this a memoir, you might need to do these other things. And I thought, I don't want this to be a memoir. And she said, but I think you're kind of funny. And I was like, oh, okay. And so it helped me relook at this through the humor lens. And then kind of going forward, whenever I was at a game or practice or driving or whatever, I just felt like humor, it was the right way. And I think we all need a little bit of humor in soccer, in sports, which are so serious. And of course, just every day in our lives. So I like that.
And in your book, you talk about soccer parents versus parents whose kids play soccer. Tell me about that distinction.
So, you know, in every family, I'll just say in our household, I was the soccer parent. My husband was just as involved, but I was the one who was much more emotionally engaged. And being the soccer parent, I felt like I was at everything. And you could kind of tell on the sideline, there was always, it wasn't necessarily a mom or a dad. There was always one who was just, they knew everything. They knew every kid's name and number and, you know, favorite ice cream flavor, and, you know, they could tell the twins apart. And so there was that parent who just knew everything. And then there was the parent who showed up and was involved, but was like, what's the score? Or, you know, I just didn't always know as much. And I felt like there is, you know, they're both are great, but it, often in households, what I experienced was there was one and there was another, and it worked.
And, you know, the lighthearted tone, but also I see a little bit of maybe venting in it, you know, like did some of that come from real life experiences of you being a soccer mom where like something happened and you were like, I have to write this down so I don't forget this. This is ridiculous.
Yes, it did. And I will say is, you know, we'd be at games and my husband would look over and I'd be typing on my phone. He goes, you're taking notes for the book, aren't you? And I'd say, yes. So there were, and, you know, my younger son, when he read the book, he's 21 now, he was talking about like, because there are no stories, there's no personal stories in there, but so much of it came out of personal experience. So there's a piece in there about driving to tryouts and all the things you really shouldn't say to your kid. And I was like, remember, I said those things to you, you know. So some of it, a lot of it is stuff I did, but there was definitely a lot of it stuff that I saw. And I was just like, wow, we shouldn't be doing these things. So.
And you also incorporate a lot of fun visuals. There's like fake screenshots of text messages, you know, or fake things where it's like, this is the team group chat. What made you decide to put it in kind of like the text message format?
Visual.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. It kind of, when it was coming together, I think it was more the format of, instead of making it all narrative, of having quizzes and pie charts. And I thought, you know, I work in marketing. We do a lot of charts and visuals. And I thought, what if we had more fun with these? And also, you know, soccer parents, we have a few minutes here and there before a game starts where you can pick up a book. And so I thought it'd be fun to be able to flip through something and have that visual aspect.
So were you a soccer parent or a parent whose kid played soccer?
Oh, I was a soccer parent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was all in. I mean, my kids loved it. I had so much fun watching them.
Do you feel like this is a uniquely soccer-based thing, or do you think that someone whose kid is involved in another travel sport, travel baseball, something like that, do you think that they would find themselves in this book a little bit too, the youth sports mindset?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. And I have, you know, I wanted to write it for all sports, but my experience was with one and I didn't want to try and fake it. I have a hockey mom friend and a swim mom friend, and they've read it and they're like, it's the same thing. It's just on ice, you know, and it's not about soccer. It's about carpooling and when to feed them dinner, when practice is in the middle of the evening, and laundry and tournaments and the costs. So it's my experience with soccer, so that's what I wrote. But yeah, I would hope that it, and I've heard people say, oh, I've got this for my friend, she's a track mom. So
and you spend a lot of time talking about the your car smelling like shin guards too. is that a soccer mom you know, tried and true test of time?
Yes, it is. But then I've heard people say, oh, well, you should, you know, with hockey, the hockey bags smell so bad, or, you know, lacrosse gloves. So but yes, my car for many years just smelled like shin guards.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about youth soccer with Karen Scholl, author of Surviving Soccer, a chill parent's guide to carpools, calendars, coaches, clubs, and corner kicks. What was the most valuable experience to you being a soccer mom? What'd you take from it?
Oh, most valuable. You know, one of the things I mean, I loved watching my kid. Yeah, especially as they got older and they were behind phones and doors and didn't want to be watched. And then they would go on the field and do something they loved. And I could watch them for 90 minutes, you know, and that was as they got older, that was really valuable. And I think also just time in the car with them. We complain about how much we have to drive. We love to complain about that. But I have a thing in the book about like driving is the new dinner. And even though it was kind of funny, it was serious, like, time in the car with my kids driving, I learned so much and had great experiences.
You also spend a lot of time learning, talking about carpools in the book. So you didn't learn just things about your kids. You learned things about other kids and other kids' families and maybe things you shouldn't know. Tell me about the carpool.
You know, at first I resisted because I was like, I like this time. But then, you know, when you've got more than one kid and you also have a life, and so having a carpool was great. But then, you know, I thought it was funny. You kind of gravitate toward people who live close to you. But then you realize, well, okay, we live close to each other, but I'm an early person and you're a just-in-time person. And then I get uneasy. So I thought it was funny to see like how we gravitated toward people who are more like us, even if we had to drive farther. And then the kids in the car, the more kids you had in the car, the more conversation they had. And I learned I just needed to shut my mouth and I could learn a lot and not ask the kids questions.
We were talking earlier in the hour with Asia Mape, who has the website, I Love to Watch You Play. And we were talking about, you know, the soccer experience. I mean, we covered a lot of ground. If you could make one aspect of the intensity of youth soccer disappear, what would it be?
Oh, that's a great question. Mm. You know, it is so emotional when we get to the mm-hmm. sidelines, and for good reason. It's our favorite person doing something, and we're trained with sports to be competitive, whether it's we're watching a pro team or whatever. So I wish we could dial some of that back. I mean, it's when you've had a bad day and you get to the field and you get to jump up and scream, that's a good feeling, maybe a good outlet, but not always the most productive one. So I think if we could just take some of that emotion and out of it and still enjoy it, that it might be a lot better for everybody.
Now, you said you had two kids in soccer. Did they do rec teams, travel teams? Like how intense did you get?
They did all of it. So mm-hmm. yeah, they started young. They started in Westerville and Rec and Wausau, and as soon as that was not like enough for mm-hmm. them, they, you know, then we moved into club. And they did travel. My older son was on a travel club where parents weren't even allowed to travel with them. They put them all on a bus and take them to Chicago or Wisconsin, and so that was a lot. But yeah, they did it all through high school. And my older son, as he got later into high school, decided he was more interested in politics and other things and didn't want to keep playing. My younger son wasn't really sure and then just decided, he was done at high school. So, but we did it all. We traveled all over. That's, you know, vacations were our weekend tournaments. So, yeah.
Did you ever have scholarships in mind, like whenever you would have these car rides, as you talk about them getting a scholarship, playing in college, that kind of thing?
Playing in college, yes. Scholarships, I think we had the reality of you don't get scholarships for soccer, and very few people get them. I as the parent admin one year, one of the moms was like, well, we're doing, and these kids were at the time like 14, she's like, we're doing this for the scholarship. And I was like, I hope there's more. There aren't many scholarships to go around. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about it. And I with my younger son, it was real serious. But then he just, you know, other things became more important. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, I would hear parents talk a lot about, well, we're making an investment in clubs so that it'll pay off for college. And I didn't really see that happen very often. I don't think that's very realistic. But I also just didn't want to pressure my kids. Mm-hmm. Getting into college was already a big enough feat. So, the ordeal and all of that. So I just, we tried not to focus on that.
Well, besides getting a book out of it, what do you think is the best thing for your kids looking back now that came out of being on all these soccer teams and all that time?
You know, they have, they're young adults. They have great coping mechanisms. They are very mature. And, you know, we say it to each other jokingly, but seriously as well, like, wow, like you learned that in soccer, you know, you learned how to manage people. My younger son has been coaching little kids now the last couple of years, and he'll talk about things that happen on, you know, as a coach, as an adult, mm-hmm. and how he's learned to handle it. And we mm-hmm. look back on things that happen in soccer. So I feel like watching the lessons they learn pay off as young adults is really remarkable.
I am a soccer mom. I'll admit that. I have an 8-year-old. He plays rec soccer. But there was one anecdote in the book that really stuck out to me, because I can't remember exactly. I'm not going to quote it correctly, but it was something like you're sitting next to or standing beside a parent that you have been next to for like 14 games, and you're like, is it too late to ask Ryan's mom what her name is? Because you only know her as Ryan's mom, and you have her in the phone as Ryan's mom. And I can appreciate that.
I had that many years, and it was so embarrassing. You're like, I know what car you drive. I know everything about your life. I know mm-hmm. your dog's name. I just don't know your name.
Right. Because you met on the very first day. And yeah, it's it is interesting. There's lots of do you feel like the moms of soccer all kind of like get together? Maybe some dads too. We're not giving dads enough credit, but the soccer moms, they get a bad rap, but they also are like, they're like a team too. Do you think?
Yes. Yes, they are. And in some ways that's good. Like you're doing all this, driving, you're going these places out in the middle, you know, you've got somebody who's in it with you. Mm-hmm. And you've got someone who, I mean, some of my closest friends are, I met through being soccer moms, and mm-hmm. they were big cheerleaders of my kids and vice versa. So definitely we all get a bad rap, and very often for good reason. But I felt like, you know, they're in some good ways, it's like a team, and some bad ways, it's like a team too.
And we only have about a minute left, but it was a complete coincidence that we had Asia Mape on as our guest from I Love to Watch You Play. But then I saw in the acknowledgments of your book, you mentioned her. So we didn't know that. So have you worked with that website before?
Yeah, I went years ago when I started writing this book, which was many, many years ago, I was doing a lot of research on what was out there, and I found her blog, and I Love to Watch You Play is, that is what you say mm-hmm. to your kids. And I connected with her then because I loved her mission. And then I was trying to get some of my writing out there. So I did some writing for her blog, and then we just stayed in touch. But she's doing really remarkable stuff for all sports.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us and congratulate you on the book.
Thank you. It's great being here.
And Karen Scholl, author of Surviving Soccer, A Chill Parent's Guide to Carpools, Calendars, Coaches, Clubs, and Corner Kicks. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Amy.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.